You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're continuing our look at the book, The Purpose Effect, Building Meaning in Yourself, Your Role, and Your Organization by Dan Pontefract, who's also the best-selling author of the book, Flat Army. Last show, we were looking at the purpose of purpose. Affecting purpose. The etymology of purpose is important to understand. Circa 1300, the old French word propos and the Anglo-French word purpos combined with propose to give us purpose. Whether as an intention, aim, and goal, or to put forth, purpose can denote a state of being, a noun, or it creates action as a transitive verb. There might be a purpose to attending a meeting, or you might be seeking purpose in the meeting itself. Aaron Hurst, author of The Purpose Economy, captured the importance of purpose in the workplace when he wrote, "Much like technology a few decades ago, purpose has now become a business imperative. In today's world, running an organization without an intentional emphasis on purpose for employees and customers is like running an organization in the early 1990s and failing to implement technology." I asked Aaron why he felt it still seems so difficult for senior leaders in today's organizations to establish a purpose economy, to embed a purpose culture at work. His response highlighted necessary ingredients. Quote, "Creating a successful organization in the purpose economy requires two types of leadership. You need authentic leaders who are able to model purpose and vulnerability. And you need leaders who have the courage to look beyond short-term results. Indeed, purpose will never envelop an organization by quarter's end. For an organization to become purposeful, it requires time and effort. The long game ought to be considered." Richard Ellsworth, author of Leading with Purpose, claimed, quote, "The highest level of individual development and the greatest happiness are derived from serving ends beyond the self, ends that employees value, that enable them to feel that they are making a difference, and consequently, that bring increased meaning to their lives through work. Can the majority of for-profit organizations and leaders argue that their firm is not being run as though the overarching goal is to extract value in favor of profits and or power? Can not-for-profit or public sector institutions honestly state their mission is to serve the community and the team members it employs? Arguably, There are too many leaders forgetting it is the team members of any type of organization that are the front line to its customers and society. We need more of the leaders and organizations that Aaron mentioned. We need more team members believing that they are making a difference, as Richard outlined. We also need team members to take action for their own sense of purpose and the role of the organization. We cannot wait for a purpose to materialize on its own. In 1970, on the topic of corporate purpose, Peter Drucker observed that purpose, quote, must lie outside the business itself. In fact, it must lie in society, since business enterprise is an organ of society. There is only one valid definition of business purpose, and that is to create a customer. Almost 30 years later, he went on to write that there is a link between an organization's purpose, its operations, and the way it treats its workers. Drucker wrote, quote, "We will have to redefine the purpose of employing organization and of its management as both satisfying the legal owners, such as the shareholders, and satisfying the owners of human capital that gives the organizations its wealth-producing power. That is, satisfying the knowledge workers. For increasingly, the ability of organizations, and not only of businesses, to survive will come to depend on their comparative advantage in making the knowledge worker productive, and the ability to attract and hold the best of the knowledge workers is the first and most fundamental precondition." Charles Handy, another sage on the topic of management, once wrote, quote, "Let us be clear, profits and good profits are always essential, and not just in business. But the myth dies hard, the myth that profit is the purpose," unquote. He also commented in the Harvard Business Review, quote, "The purpose of a business is to make a profit so that the business can do something more or better. That something becomes the real justification for the business," unquote. If we were to define how to serve the customer collaboratively as part of a community, society, and the environment, levels of employee disengagement, workplace dissatisfaction, and customer unhappiness might disappear. Perhaps this is part of the relationship between culture and purpose. Building purpose in the work for everyone is a journey. The state at which the sweet spot is created might actually mitigate one of Drucker's issues. Quote, "Business purpose and business mission are so rarely given adequate thought, is perhaps the most important cause of business frustration and failure," unquote. Abraham Lincoln once wrote, "Every man is proud of what he does well, and no man is proud of what he does not do well. Which, with the former, his heart is in his work, and he will do twice as much of it with less fatigue. The latter performs a little imperfectly, looks at it with disgust, turns from it, and imagines himself exceedingly tired. The little he has done comes to nothing for want of finishing." How many individuals in today's organizations are empowered, as Lincoln suggested, to put their hearts in their role and to go above the call of duty at work? How many team members truly feel a sense of both accomplishment and purpose? How many of the leaders and followers believe that there is a purpose in their place of work, one positively affecting all stakeholders in society? How many team members have defined their own sense of personal purpose, yet end up working in contradiction of that definition? How can the purpose effect actually come to fruition? In the next sections, we will share my personal experiences with purpose on a personal, organizational, and role level, hoping to shed some light on my interpretation of the sweet spot. Chapter 2, Moral Purpose. To improve is to change, so to be perfect is to have changed often. Winston Churchill. I prefer to be true to myself, even at the hazard of incurring the ridicule of others, rather than to be false and to incur my own abhorrence. Frederick Douglass. The purpose effect is not merely a theory. It is established in groundwork proven by the solidified thought, additional interviews, site visits, and external research. I have personally experienced this model throughout my entire working life. I have also been in a position to assist others, individuals, and organizations create the sweet spot of the purpose effect. We learn as we do. I share my story here, therefore, not only to reflect on the authenticity of the model, but to share personal experiences and lessons learned for the benefit of others. First, let me go back to the early 1980s. Growing up, I wanted to be a doctor. Apparently, many kids do. When I reached the age of 17 in 1988, an injury to my right knee required surgery, putting an end to my dream. After falling unconscious when the sixth vial of blood was removed from my body during my pre-op procedure, it seemed the thought of blood and being a doctor was not a good mix for me in the long term. As my dad reminded me, it was perhaps not in the best interest of future patients either. After the surgery, I went through a rather painful 6 months of physiotherapy. As a brooding teenager, these were dark days. 3 times a week, I schlepped my body into a public bus for a 45-minute ride to a renowned rehabilitation clinic where I received treatment on my leg. The experience strengthened my intention to help other people during my adult life. Instead of being a doctor, I committed myself to becoming a physiotherapist. No blood in those clinics, I said to myself repeatedly. As high school concluded in the spring of 1990, the important decisions were being made by thousands of graduating students on their choice of post-secondary education. I had another epiphany. Albeit noble and important work, a physiotherapist helps clients get back to previous levels of health prior to an injury or surgery. A physiotherapist's role is not necessarily meant to improve someone's ability to go past their original status quo. It was to get as close to the previous state of health as possible. The staff helped mend my knee, but it was not as though I became faster at the end of 6 months of therapy. I was fortunate to be admitted to several physiotherapy programs at the university level, but my epiphany had a significant bearing on my life and my work history. This epiphany is the reason that I can write a book like Flat Army, or this one, The Purpose Effect. It was during the summer of 1990 when I turned down all offers of attending a physiotherapy university program in favor of pursuing a Bachelor of Education degree. As I considered my personal sense of purpose, I did not want simply to help people get back to a previously attained state of healthiness. I wanted to help people overachieve, to accomplish great things in life. It was at this moment in time, as a naive but insistent 19-year-old student, that I chose a profession in which I could help others to excel. I graduated in 1994 as a high school teacher, but my entire working tenure in the field amounted to less than 3 years of cumulative service. Having defined my personal sense of purpose, my values, interests, goals, and priorities, as someone who wanted to help others while being able to continuously learn and innovate, I recognized early on my high school teaching career that my personal sense of purpose was misaligned with the organization that employed me and the role I occupied. What to do? What motivates me in my life is the chance to innovate, learn, and assist others to achieve great things. I thought this might be accomplished in a high school organization in the role of high school teacher. I was wrong. The organization I was a part of possessed an ambivalent, if not apathetic, culture. There were several people who demonstrated purpose in their roles, but far too many were simply in it for the vacations, which are long, and the paycheck. This environment affected both my personal sense of purpose and somewhat obviously the role I was occupying. I quickly fell into a job mindset at work. I felt as though I was performing transactional duties in return for compensation and not much else. My personal sense of purpose was going unfulfilled. The attitude of staff members and the organization in general was stifling my growth, my learning, and my innovating mindset. The organization tried desperately to portray a purposeful working environment. It was, after all, a high school. But politics and bad processes got in the way of achieving my personal values and goals. I felt I had to take matters into my own hands. It was perhaps the first time I could put the purpose effect into action. I certainly was not calling it the purpose effect in 1997, but in hindsight, that is exactly what it was. I was not feeling fulfilled. I was disengaged at work. I needed to revisit my personal purpose in order to work out what might be the next. If I could not help the organization change its ways, perhaps it was time to move on. After a year of reflection and additional schooling, I found myself in 1998 at the British Columbia Institute of Technology, also known as BCIT, as a program head. I made the switch to higher education. Maybe this role at this time and in this organization could help me balance my take on the purpose effect.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby, and you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, Instructor of Future Studies at Simon Fraser University. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
With thousands of homeless animals entering SPCA shelters each year, pet overpopulation is a serious problem in BC, but it's one you can help prevent. Spay or neuter your companion animal today. From our perspective, every homeless animal on our streets or in our shelters is one too many. For more information on spaying and neutering initiatives, visit the BC SPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are looking at the book, The Purpose Effect, Building Meaning in Yourself, Your Role, and Your Organization by Dan Pontefract. It was the first time I entered into the role where all facets of the sweet spot, personal, organizational, and role, seemed to quickly come into alignment. The institution and the faculty provided the opportunity to start up a business unit, and with that came the chance to help shape and reinforce the organization's purpose. The larger entity I was employed by, BCIT, was a hub of engagement and purpose. It discovered and delivered value to the students. There were benefits across multiple stakeholders. The institution was constantly innovating, encouraging faculty and personnel to revolutionize education, to take risks, and to make the student experience as practical and outstanding as possible. I was always thinking about how it could positively affect society. One group of educators and administrators, for example, sought to create an aviation and aerospace campus.
The team involved managed to get actual airplanes donated for students to work on. A partnership with Lufthansa Technical Training, also known as LTT, was also formulated. This reinforced the innovation and practical mindset that emulated from the organization's purpose. It created a number of jobs for graduates as well. Why my personal purpose? And with my personal purpose intact and the organization in good stead, I found the role I held in higher education allowed me the chance to fulfill my values and interests, to learn, to innovate, to prosper, and to help others truly grow and develop. In my department and in programs I helped launch, we worked with the broader community in British Columbia to develop websites, systems, and technology solutions to aid the not-for-profit public sector and for-profit organizations. There were always obstacles to overcome, but for me, the sweet spot was evident between the three categories of purpose. The department, and BCIT in general, was also demonstrating the sweet spot with an engaged workforce, profitable returns, most importantly, benefits that were accruing across all stakeholders, including thousands of students partaking in various educational programs. After 5 years of being part of a truly purposeful scenario, I felt it was time to continue my learning and innovating values elsewhere. I wanted to continue to develop, define, and decide what I was about, who I was, and how I was going to operate in my life. I was not disappointed or disengaged with BCIT. On the contrary, I sought out a position away from academia and education in which to continue my purpose journey. I challenged myself to find another sweet spot. I decided to enter the corporate world. The high-tech years. While my time in higher education helped me teach and understand the intricacies between learning and technology, it has been my time in the corporate world where I have refined the link between purpose, culture, engagement, technology, business results, and leadership development. Between 2002 and 2008, I was the head of the UBI, the University of Business Intelligence. It was a corporate university that I founded and led at Crystal Decisions and later Business Objects. These companies created business intelligence software. The team of over 100 in UBI served employees, partners, and customers with various learning, knowledge, implementation, and leadership needs. Business Objects acquired Crystal Decisions, but UBI continued on with audience size substantially growing after the deal closed in 2003. I was fortunate to be part beyond the UBI team as part of the Business Objects company because both demonstrated quite effectively how organizations can be purpose-driven. For example, Business Objects possessed a team dedicated to community investment and philanthropy, unheard of in high-tech companies at that time. Various teams would often donate time in the community. It becoming a staple of the organizational culture. Software was often gifted to schools and for not-for-profit organizations, and the UBI team would find ways to donate instructional time and e-learning modules as part of the practice. The employee engagement scores at UBI measured in the high 80s, while the customer feedback and opinion were equally high. Although the UBI team was spread across 12 time zones in 7 different countries, the culture and operating norm was as though team members were not only in the same room, but everyone was proactive, harmonious, and collaborative with one another. During my tenure at UBI, my personal values and interests were being fully met. UBI existed to deliver various educational and learning services to the range of audiences. We operated to make a profit, but we also focused on the community. We also looked after one another. The level of camaraderie and togetherness was simply magical. UVI and its parent companies existed to deliver value to all stakeholders, the community, customers, partners, owners, and team members. Its operating culture was one that was open, collaborative, and harmonious. In terms of my role, it existed to serve the mission of Business Objects and UBI, but it also permitted me the latitude to continuously innovate, learn, and assist others. Again, the three categories of purpose were in complete alignment, and thus both the organization and I were demonstrating the sweet spot. In the blink of an eye, things changed dramatically for me and the organization. But in the summer of 2007, giants in the high-tech space, such as Oracle, IBM, SAP, and Microsoft, were circling like turkey vultures to do spotting a field of mice to acquire business intelligence companies like Cognos, MicroStrategy, and Business Objects. SAP, an enterprise resource planning company based in Waldorf, Germany, announced its intention to acquire Business Objects in October 2007. Over the next 9 months, I flew from Vancouver to Germany and the Bay Area of California numerous times to help with the integration of Business Objects into SAP. The meetings between the two organizations were cordial, but it's evident from the onset that things in the future were going to be different. I was not so naive to think everything was going to remain the same, but the tone in these discussions was perhaps more one-sided in favor of the SAP way than I had anticipated or hoped for. I was beginning to question whether SAP possessed the same type of organizational purpose as Business Objects. At the time, it seemed to be a company fixated on profit and revenues, not the holistic purpose that I was used to from the previous 5 years at both Crystal Decisions and Business Objects. I was also beginning to query whether the sense of purpose I possessed in my role at Business Objects would continue at SAP. Would the sweet spot turn sour? Would the team and organization that once was be engulfed by very motivated and power-hungry SAP? Would I be given the opportunity to shape and help shape and reshape the culture and purpose of SAP like I had done at BCIT and Business Objects? It was early on in the integration process between the two organizations, however, that the leaders whom I reported to, Dan Klein, took me aside during one of my trips to San Jose, California, and jostled my understanding of workplace purpose. Dan had been my leader and vice president since the summer of 2003, and he was always looking out for my future and for my best interests. He would ask personal questions in our one-on-one meetings, like how our children were doing. He would frequently discuss with me ways to continue learning, developing, innovating, and building up my leadership skills. My personal purpose, values, and priorities were well understood by Dan. He often suggested conferences and other external learning opportunities for me to attend. He always gave me a long leash to innovate. Dan truly was interested in my workplace mindset, but he's equally concerned for me as a human being. He helped me to continue honing my personal and role-based purpose. We're going to continue looking at this book, very interesting book, The Purpose Effect by Dan Pontefract, in subsequent shows. So please stay tuned.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby, and Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.